Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's happiest podcast network.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Bookish. I'm George Demorelis, and with me today is Alexei Toliopoulos.
Oh my god, even you can't pronounce it.
No. Toliopoulos is beautiful. Correct.
That's correct.
Okay, I just panicked because I was scrolling to your bio so I could say it as well. So before you say hi, just wait, Alexei. All right. Alexei Toliopoulos is a comedian, filmmaker, writer, and podcaster with an unmatched knowledge of popular culture. Besides live comedy and his beloved podcast, this is really long, I just realized, to start a show.
Oh my goodness.
With.
Yeah, and it's like written in my third person.
Yeah, no, you love movies, you love podcasts, you do writing, you work in a production company, you're on ABC TV's The Mix, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And you're also on the Sans Pants Network with your good buddy Cameron James, with your two podcasts right now, which is Total Reboot and Mic Check.
Yes, Mic Check. We've done an episode recently for the first time in years. But Total Reboot we do every week. We're brothers on Sans
Pants.
Yeah, exactly.
Sans Pants brothers. So there you go. I think I did I get everything?
I think so,
perfect.
Yes.
That was
it was very embarrassing because I know that I wrote that bio like 2 years ago, and hearing it back, I'm like, oh, I suck, I hate this.
Oh, yeah. No, that's standard. It's so funny, you have to do a bio and you have to go in third person.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, like if you enjoyed it, you'd be a bit worried, I think.
Yeah, I think it's psycho to write and go like, God, this. I'm loving writing my little fucking autobiography right now of the last year's worth of career highlights. And then it's like, no, it's like I'm writing it. I want to write like Alexei Toliopoulos is currently depressed from writing this exact paragraph that you're reading right now.
Everyone's going to kind of like, everyone just assumes that the case, I'm sure. We're in comedy where it's fine. Everyone knows.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's okay. Yeah, so not myself. I love that you're drinking a Mythos at 3:25 p.m. Like, could you be more quarantine right now?
Exactly. This is quarantine lifestyle. Whenever I'm getting on a podcast, I'm like, crack a Mythos open, sit back, have a Beeros, and just chat and loosen up.
I like,
because it's like no one's performing anymore. Like this, I barely qualify this as performing. Talking to my friend at my computer, I'm like, oh, I got to pretend that it's somehow normal that we're hanging out or that we're like performing in a live kind of setting.
Yeah, no, it's so you do that by drinking a beer.
Yeah, it's how I switch on. I'm like, okay comedy. Now,
that's how I know it's time for business. I'm having a beer. Yeah. The Mythos only comes out when I'm performing. That's
Exactly. You're gonna be... I made them at the comedy show that I used to host. I was like, you got to get a case of Mythos for me just so I can have it over a few months. It's going to make me a better performer. I'm going to be more gregarious, more myself.
I was actually about to make a joke about you being the Greekest diva ever, and you actually were. So
well, there's not too many in comedy these days, right?
No, there's a few. There's like some of the older guard as well, and then...
Yeah, exactly. The ones that we look up to. They're listening. They're seeing these two names together on a podcast. They're all listening
right
now.
That's correct. That's a good point. What is your book for today that you're going to be talking about?
I actually struggle to kind of bring it down because when I think about it, like the books that I care about the most, that's the thing that they have in common is that there is like this, I guess, you know, like either a Greek element or migrant element, like that diasporic element. And like the first book that I chose is like one that I've like discussed, a story that I've discussed a lot over the last couple of years was the book Melina Marchetta's Looking for Alibrandi, which I've like covered a lot, which was one that I last year I hosted like this awesome table read of her script and I got to like interview her a lot and like work with her and like find like her old scripts and bring them together to like do like this awesome live table read with like so many of my funny comedian friends for the 20th anniversary of the movie was like this week. So it was like to lead up to the 20th anniversary. So I'm glad we did it last year instead of waiting till this week to do it. But that was a story that like I deeply love and connect to. And I thought it would be good for this, but then I changed it because I wanted to do something that you had read as well. But the reason I think about that so much as like one of my favorite books is because it is set in like literally the part of Sydney that I grew up in a very similar like ethnic diaspora, but it's like Italian instead of Greek, but I grew up in the same Italian neighborhoods as well. And for that movie and that book, especially the movie, like when I watched the movie, the way that I described it was like, now when I see it, it's like watching my memories again and like seeing a home photo album come to life, especially like the dynamic. I grew up with my mom and my yaya, just the three of us in a household. And like, that's the same dynamic in that movie. And it's like such an accurate portrayal of like this generational divide between like first or second generation migrants and their parents that migrated here and all that stuff. So like, that's the book that I care about the most. But then bringing it here today, I was like, oh, I care too much. I care too much.
What do you mean you care too much? The only issue I have is like, I feel like you've raked that book over the coals a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you think you've got it all figured out, which I would have liked to unpack. But
yeah, maybe next time. Next time. Because I was like, you know, I've talked about it so much that I'm kind of like, oh, well, you know, I just don't want people to just go, Alexi's read only one book in his whole life, and it's a book that he read in high school.
Which would be all right, but no, I did like your second choice that you told me about, so you want to say what it is?
The book that I chose to talk with you today is by Nikos Kazantzakis. The book is Zorba the Greek, and I've got my old trusty copy here today.
And it's one of my favorite things about this show so far has been how many people have brought in a copy of the book that they like. It makes it real special. I can see you. I've got a different colored copy to that, but it's a great, I'm actually excited because this is the first recording so far, which has only been seven, but where not only have I read the book, but this is one of my all time faves as well. Wow. That's why I didn't push too hard for looking for a band. Yeah. You mentioned sort of. I was like, you know what?
When I gave you the three options, you're like, well, there's one that I've read and I'd love to discuss with you. So I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as you said that, I was like, I think, because, you know, you and I, we're friends and we've known each other for a while. But because we live in different cities, I think that this would be a really interesting one for us two young Greek comedians to be able to talk about like our heritage together. Because I feel like it's one of those rare things where, especially in this industry, where there is like this divide between like the kind of comedy that you and I work in and like that ethnic comedy that I definitely grew up watching a lot. And I think that there's like this thing that I found really hard to articulate, and I've been trying to like find a way to express it creatively, is that feeling of difference that is talked about so much in like stuff like this and Looking for Ella Brandine, all of those things, like those big, like, you know, big capital W WOG works that have like stood the test of time in this country, that have been about like that racial divide, that ethnic divide, and how important they were and how it's about that difference. And I think in the years, like since I've graduated high school, like the last decade or so, I've gone from feeling like I am like culturally different to now having like to, and I think for people like us and for Italian people and stuff, to now feel like, oh, we're just white as well now. And that 10-year gap between like those two feelings is something that I've had like a big struggle with trying to like culturally define myself now.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I've actually spoken with a mate about it a little while ago. So I want to say all this with due respect to the appropriate parties, but basically, like, it's funny when you look at it and you look at the, I guess, WOG humor as it was for us growing up in the 90s, Acropolis Now and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like, and the thing is now, it's funny, like, I was talking to a friend about it. It's like basically that WOG humor almost, because I agree that we've gone more, the whites have accepted us.
Yeah.
or at least they've let us in. They're like, there's people browner than you. You guys are in. They're browner now. So
exactly. Now you're white. We're all normal now. And it's like like this weird thing that's like hard to talk about, where it's like, I feel like I missed out on any of the benefits in my life that would have come from being different. And now that I'm just another white dude, that's like, the weird thing that's happened.
Like, I'm not going to get any extra funding from Screen Australia being Greek.
Exactly. I spoke another language until I was fucking 10 years old. I didn't know how to speak English, dude. I'm basically a migrant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that true?
Until I was bad at English until I was like 5 or 6 when I, like, I'm first generation born in this country, but my dad is Australian. My mom is Greek. And they migrated here in like the 60s after like Greek Civil War and stuff. And
so wait, so your dad, mom and dad are both born in
Greece? No, my dad's Australian. Like my dad's just Australian, but I like grew up with my mom. So I've always like, you know. Yeah.
Right.
And so like I grew up with my mom and my grandma, my papu and my yaya. And like, so it was very much like very Greek upbringing. I spoke only Greek at home because my dad learned how to speak Greek as well. But like, because I lived with my yaya and papu that didn't speak, like they spoke Greek was their primary language. That was how I communicated all the time at home. So when I was going to school, like I was doing like special English classes and stuff, like an ESL kid. And like we went, my mom and dad and I, we lived in Greece for like 6 or 7 months when I was like 4 years old. And so there, I only spoke Greek for like half a year. I didn't speak one word of English for half a year. So then coming right back from that and going straight into like kindergarten, I was like, it was like a big struggle. And I didn't know how to, I didn't know how to speak English for a while. I forgot how to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Like, as in, are you the eldest? Do you have any siblings?
No siblings. So I guess I'm not actually Greek is what I've revealed. I'm the only Greek only child.
We're breaking, we're smashing stereotypes here.
Smashing plates, smashing stereotypes, brother.
As I guess we're doing with some stereotypes. While you drink a Greek mythos. But mythos is a Greek beer, by the way.
Oh, yeah. If anyone has to figure that out contextually by one of the Greekest sounding words and me drinking it, getting positively looser as it goes on.
But that's interesting because I've got three brothers, and the eldest, when he was growing up, because I'm first generation as well, and both my parents were born in Greece and migrated here, and he didn't speak any English at all until he was 5 years old and he went to kindergarten or school. So my mum, it scarred my mum for life.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't speak English, so he was full shattered when he was at kindergarten. And my mum was like, she still talks about it to this day, like a traumatic experience, seeing her son sitting there unable to play with all the kids and all sad because he can't speak the language.
Well, mine was not that bad, thankfully. Hey, you're allowed to laugh. You got away from it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, he did all the damage, so I could. I had it easy. Yeah. Coasted along, thirdborn. It's a way to be.
Oh man, it's great. Damn. I got to get my mom and dad to get back together and have a couple of kids so they can coast through the rest of life.
Yeah. Oh man, they've got it easy now. Yeah. Definitely. Especially now it's like they're white anyway. They got it
exactly.
Sweet.
Yeah. Exactly.
But hand in hand with that though, I know what you mean. Like. But the other thing is, like, even in terms of the comedy, if you want to go into the comedy part for a second, it's like you've got the classic, I don't want to say basic, like it's dumb, but basic as in it's been there forever type of WOG humor, which even people now are doing in their own version, which is a lot of fun. Like, even you've got Sushi Mango and stuff like that. It's really fun, really popular. But it's still kind of the same style as it was in the 90s almost. Like, it hasn't kind of updated. So one of the things I was talking to a friend is, like, you want to kind of have a new element now of, I guess, the next sort of wave of that style, and what does that look like, and what is it, and how do you like, represent that? So we're not like, oh, the Skippies and the Wogs, and
here's
my
the
girlfriend
difference.
Doesn't know how to cook, but my Greek mum is the best cook.
Dude, I'm still laughing. You got me, dude. You got me.
Fuck, it's all right. Yeah. You don't forget what I just said. Yeah. We're going back to basics.
Yeah. But it's like,
give me tarama. Where's the galaktoburiko?
Oh my God, I love galaktoburiko. That's all it is. Like, galaktoburiko, I know the word.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think for me, it's like, you know, that aspect of it is like, I guess I've been interpreting it like, ironically, like I'll be doing all that, but I'm like, oh yes, but I'm winking, so it's not that. But they're like, no, it is that. But you know, not playing to a completely Greek audience. So I'm like, they're like, there's like one Greek kid that's going like, this is awesome, and the rest are like, he's saying a funny word. He's saying his name over and over again and a funny word.
It's true. Look, we got to pander to these bloody whites. They've let us into the club. We've got to dance for our supper. We get it, guys. We get it if you're listening.
We get it.
You don't give a shit about us.
We are you now. We get it.
Yeah, we get it. God, I can't wait till we're not the latest entry in the club. I'm eyeing off those lebs, but they just keep being weird.
I can't say this. I feel weird now. That's the difference. That's why we've assimilated. We can't say it anymore.
Well, mate, I've got plenty of friends who are lebs.
That's why I kind of like, when I thought of this book and like, it had been a while since I'd read it. And I just thought like, this would be like a good way for you and I to like spark a conversation, especially when you said like, oh, this is one of your favorite books. And you said it for the exact same reason that I did, in that it's one of those books where it's got a mission, this book. And reading it, that mission is so clear. And Nikos Kazantzakis is such a beautiful writer. Like, I just love reading his prose, even though it's translated from another language. I think they are able to capture what he does best, like in his descriptions and the way that he constructs sentences in this really elegant way in the translation. But this whole mission is like, put the fucking book down and get out into the world. And I've been trying to reread it again since we decided to do it. And let me tell you, this was the wrong book to read while you can't leave the house. Yes.
I was about to say yes.
It's like, you know, people always go like, oh, what a great book. You can't put it down. You can't put it down. This whole book is like the opposite of that. It's like, you got to put this book down, get out and live your freaking life.
Get that
lust for life. Be Greek, be beautiful and be powerful and live every day. And reading it while you can't leave like the fucking 20 square meters that I live in has been so difficult, and I almost regret choosing it.
No, I know what you mean, man. It's literally like, stop being a goddamn nerd. Go out.
Yes.
Like, break some hearts, have your heart broken, get drunk and dance. And that's it's amazing.
Exactly. It's a stunning book, I do think.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And like I said to you, like, as in, that was my, when I was working at the bank, I was like, this is a book. I was like, I'm not going to read this while I'm here because it's too much. Because I always had like, the way I phrased it, I said, in case of emergency, break glass book. That's kind of what I had it as.
Yes.
Like, as in, if things are going wherever, read this book and it will make you like reevaluate. You already know it's going to make you reevaluate shit. Like, because it will have that actual impact.
Absolutely, yeah. So, when did you come to the book? When did you find it?
I would have been in uni sometime, I think. Mm. I'm guessing, so like 2023, something like 22.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what it was, like, just because I was like, oh, I want to be a bit more international in my reading, and I saw some list of like best 100 international books.
Yeah.
So being Greek, obviously I saw it and I'm like, as if, and but in my head I was like, oh, as if. Like, as if, because even us talking about this now, it's like, you don't want to, anyone listening who's like, oh, look at these two goddamn Greeks loving, of course they love Sword of the Greek. And look, bias is definitely involved in this. Let's not deny that for a second.
I would never deny it. There is bias, dude. There is
extreme bias. Yeah, no doubt. But at the same time, I actually do think it's an amazing book for like the reason it makes it onto these lists of best books ever. International thing is because it's beautiful. But that's kind of why I read it the first time. And then I'm like, damn it, it's that good. But no one's ever going to believe me.
Had you seen the film as well? Had you seen
that? No. I watched the film way later.
Yeah.
Way later.
I can't remember what I would have seen first, because I think it would have been around the same time. So I came to this book and other Nikos Kazantzakis books in high school. And I think it was because like my papu's favorite author and my mum's favorite author, or to an extent, like she had very similar relationship to this book because, like I said, my mum is Greek, as we would. My papu really loved Nikos Kazantzakis. And so he always had his books around. So I was aware of who he was. And then, you know, as you're in high school and you're like finding yourself, I'm grappling with my heritage and stuff and like trying to figure out like what my cultural heritage is, where I stand in balance and how I am similar and different to everyone, and trying to like as well start on that creative path of like, oh, I want to be a creative. I want to be like a filmmaker or a writer or something. And going down that path, you're like, okay, well, what should I be taking in so I can expel that into the world as well? What should my influences be, and what is part of my, like, what's part of my creative lineage has always been something that's been very, very interesting. Like, who are my influences and what do I what do I wear on my sleeve as my influences, and what do I like thinking of that, like that creative lineage, that creative heritage. And I was thinking this was more literal, like, because it's what my family liked. I was like, this should be part of my DNA as well, because it's part of my actual DNA. It should be part of my creative DNA. So I started reading Nikos Kazantzakis. I started with another book that I suggested, which was The Last Temptation of Christ, which is a book that I, like, absolutely, I was like 15 when I read it and blew my fucking dick into the dirt. Like I couldn't believe this book, that it was like so cool and dangerous. It's about, it's like a novel, a fictionalized novel about Christ's life, and portrays Christ as a man. And then I saw the film adaptation by Martin Scorsese, which I think is gorgeous as well. I love that movie. And so I think then Zorba was like the next one that I read. And I loved the movie, and I saw the movie probably around the same time as reading it. And it kind of like being this thing, because I've never been back to Greece since I was like 4 or 5 years old. I haven't been back since.
No way.
I haven't. And I was I was planning to go like as of like next month. I would have been like in Greece doing my pilgrimage, because I've been like, you know, doing stand up and stuff, and I wanted to like I had a monthly show that I was like, I want to stick to this and I'll go travel afterwards. I've been traveling before, but I hadn't been back to Greece. I was like, after this show ends, I'm going to start, and I've been know where I am with work and I've saved up money. That's when I'm going to like go, okay, now I can go back home, or guess see my family again, and like kind of like, you know, make an adult friendships and adult relationships with my family back in Greece that I haven't seen for a long time. I've only talked to on the phone here, there, every few years. And so it's like always been in the back of my mind, this book, this movie. And so I started revisiting them now, and it is like, it's because the book is like from a perspective, or the movie at least is from a perspective of someone who is Greek but an outsider returning. And then the book is like this, it's this interesting character. Oh, how should we even summarize this book? I don't think we've even done that.
We don't really, like, as in, it's not, the funny thing is, it's not a very plot heavy book in the first place.
Basically, yeah, exactly.
A young guy who decides he wants to like get away from stuff, which is kind of hinted at, that it was like a homosexual relationship that he's kind of running away from, but it's not.
That was something that, as I'm reading it now, I did not. And that's all I can see in the book. But when I was a teenager, I didn't see it at all.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, yeah. It doesn't actually like it. It doesn't overtly say that's the reason, or even that the reason was because it broke up, or whether because he felt so much shame about it. It doesn't really go into that.
Yeah.
But I think it might actually be a case of him repressing what he wanted to do, and that would tie in perfectly with the entire book anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then basically he meets an old dude, Zorba, and then they go to an island and adventure ensues.
Yeah, it's very sad, melancholic, but fun, funny, weird, life-affirming adventure. And it's interesting because it's like these two philosophies is kind of like the way that the book is set up, but I only think one is criticized. I think that there's two philosophies. One is the book is written by from the perspective of like a young intellectual, a writer who's kind of portrayed as like this nerdy type, a character that I would say I can relate to. This like nerdy type who's got like some, he's got like some trepidations in his life, some timidness, whose like friend or partner had left to go, I guess like go help like the persecuted Greeks in Russia. And this is like set in like, when's this book set? Like late 1800s, early 1900s?
Yeah, I think something like that. Yeah.
And so...
I would have thought maybe even a little... Yeah, something around... I thought like 1915.
Yeah.
I
don't know. It doesn't have a big stab going like this year at the start of every chapter. But
after the death of Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Oh, okay. I know exactly what year we're set in.
It's perfect.
Perfect. Right. Thank you. That's the most cataclysmic moment in history that I know everything that happened around.
I know the exact date.
Yeah. But and it's like his partner's going off to like live like this, or his friend is going to live like this. I'm doing friends in quotation marks.
Yeah.
His friend has gone to like live like
so
this.
Just to let everyone know.
This like freedom fighter life. It is. Like it's so friends. Where it's especially the way that Kazantzakis like describes the way that like he's starting to talk about his friend, or like remember his friend and remember like their time together and they're saying goodbye. It is so elegant and so romantic. The way that Kazantzakis' prose goes from like in the moment of him, our narrator, like being in the room and being in the world and slowly seeping back into his mind and into his memories. And then you're inside the memory, like as he's remembering things. It's very heartfelt and heartbreaking. I'm like, my God, how did I not see this as a relationship as a kid, where I'm just like, oh, his mate, his old mate and stuff. And now I seem like this is really tragic and really romantic. And like, it's, I really got to me reading it now. And then the other, so it's his life as like kind of like seeing himself as like an outsider and not an adventurer and someone who doesn't like grab life by the horns, as probably Zorba would say. But then like a closed life and a quiet life. And he's put into this situation where he inherits like his family mine. And so he has to go to Crete to like bring the mine back and like be like the boss of this mine and the owner of it. And there he, on the way there, he meets Alexis Sorbas, who is it's hard, not stereotype, but I think it's because Zorba is like truly one of like the most, in a weird way, iconic characters of literature and popular culture. Oh, like, that has kind of like,
yeah, he's like the contrast that is him is impossible, but somehow it works.
Somehow it works. And I think because this story, this book, and then like the film adaptation, like it has this really weird place in popular culture where the song, the Zorba and the dance like inventions by like Mikis Theodorakis, who did the soundtrack for the film, the score. And like that song that you hear associated, like, you know, I've been brought on stage to that song. And like, it's a song that plays at every, not even Greek wedding, every wedding, because it's known as like this wedding dance and stuff like that. As like this, like people think it's like, oh, it's this classic Greek folk song that's been around for hundreds of years. The song was written in like 1956 or whatever that movie came out, by Mikis Theodorakis, who's like one of the greatest composers and like a great Greek composer and folk musician and everything. He is a legend. I adore his work. And he, that's like, he made that song up, and now it's become like something that's not even like popular culture. It's like culture that, and it's, so it's like eclipsed so many other works. And Zorba being like this gregarious, like I guess the definition of gregarious and the definition of someone that lives life, works hard, and then every moment is about living and being present, and the philosophies of being in life and being in love and being like being, I don't even know how to describe it, but like being energy and being a giver and a taker in the world, where you take energy and you give energy back. And I think that this book never criticizes Zorba. It never criticizes him. It's all about embracing that perspective and that lifestyle. Like,
you could almost argue that is a critique of it, the fact that it doesn't present the negatives of that side.
Way. I think it would be a gentle critique, because I'm like, well, art doesn't live in a vacuum. So it's like, it's not just up to this one author to give two sides of the story. It's like someone else should go and write a response, like some nerd like me should be like, actually the nerds have a good couple of things I did.
Have you stayed inside? It is very comfortable, actually.
Yeah. Right now, that's what I'm going to do in quarantine. I'm going to write this and go like, okay, Zorba would be dead right now, okay, if this was happening today.
We're doing the story of when Zorba can't go out anymore and then he needs the nerds to help him eat, okay?
Exactly. And Zorba's not doing a freaking Zoom chat right now, okay? Zorba's out there living. And it's like, you know, that, I think that's like, I don't want to call it a critique of that, because it's not something that I don't, when I read a piece, I'm like, I want, or when I read or watch a film, I'm always like, I want the perspective of the author. I want what the author intends. I don't need like both sides. To me, art is not unbiased. Art should be biased. And I think that I think that art should be like of the perspective of its like creator. And I think that's what I like about this book, is that like, I'm not sitting there going like, oh my God, what a vlaka. I want to hear criticism of Zorba. Okay. I'm not going that. I'm like, I go, this is what was intended. This is what I want.
So you're getting drawn into that world that it's created, which includes the person's vision who's creating it. So it's like, you're really getting drawn, which from his point of view, and I think like it has that element, which, cause I agree with you 100% about like the, relating to, like, I don't think anyone really, no one's reading that book because of because it gets quite philosophical in bits.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's reading that book is relating to Zorba. Like everyone's relating the other way with that.
Exactly. Like, it's not like literally the equivalent of it today would be, or for listeners, if you're in Australia, the equivalent of it would be like someone who works literally in the mines, which we have a lot of in Australia, works extremely hard in the mines, and then for the rest of their life, it's all about living and all about, like, I guess, partying. So you could make this, like, a modern-day movie set in, like, Perth or like, the Gold Coast, like, fly-in, fly-out lifestyle. That's who Zorba is.
Yeah, but it's, like, at the same time, it's not living for the sake of a... Like, because I remember trying to describe it to a mate of mine once when I was convincing him to watch the movie because he doesn't read books.
Yeah.
But one of the things I was, when I did finally watch the movie and I was blown away by, was how well they actually kind of did manage to capture that contradiction that is Zorba. Like, as in, it doesn't make, because it's so hard to explain to someone that he's not just like some fuck everything, like, it's not misanthropic or solipsistic or uncaring, but at the same time, it's so uncaring. Like, somehow, it's like, for me, it was like the way I described it to him, like, it's just someone who, like, will do whatever he wants when he wants. So, like, literally tomorrow, he could turn around and get married and be married for 15 years.
Yes.
And then the next one day, wake up and be like, nah, and then just go do something else. And he's never, like, all he's ever doing is being true to
himself.
Yeah.
True to the spirit, if you will. And I think I think that's kind of like what this book, what the, like, the contradictions of Zorba, what makes it beautiful in a way is, like, yeah, it's really selfish, but it's like his perspective on it. And then I guess the way that it is interpreted in the text is that, like, he's doing it for himself, but it is also for the good of that. Like, I don't even know how to describe it, but, like, it's good for the spirit that is out there existing in the world. Like, he is someone that invigorates the world and invigorates life.
Yeah, like, he's good for the world. So I guess what you're saying there is almost that's why he's allowed to do it.
Yes. I think that's what Cousin Zekas's perspective is a bit like that.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of like when you say that, that's interesting because that technically means that you don't necessarily need to put the book down when you fully embrace it, because you could be like, me being me is someone reading this book. Like, couldn't you argue that kind of?
I think so. I think you could argue that.
Yeah, like, you don't get me wrong, no one thinks that when they're reading
it. When you're reading it, you're not going that, but you can, like, you can bring that decision back to yourself, I guess.
Well, you know, the idea of, like, being true to yourself, I guess, is like how to do that, because that's fundamentally his thing. He just does whatever is him in its purest sense all the time. Like, I don't know. Like, would you say, because I get the same feeling. And then I'm like, oh, but am I faking it if I try to live like that?
Exactly. And it's also not just like that faking. It's like that sense of, like, that sense of imposter syndrome. But it's also like, would people want that from me? Like, if I'm... You know, like, I think Zorba is like that person where it's like that life of the party where it's like they've got this magnetism about them. You can't be drawn away from them. They're like, they're larger than life. Like, all the things you would describe, like that, like Zorba with all the cliches that you would describe, like that life of the party person. And I think that it's one of those things where it's like, I guess maybe this novel is more measured than I anticipated, because I think it is... You know, I don't think it's encouraging you to be Zorba. I don't think it's encouraging you to be Zorba. I think it's just encouraging you to live life to the fullest, to what you want that to be, and maybe to challenge yourself a little bit further in, like, embracing life and enjoying life and having that lust for it.
Yeah, because, like, I don't know, have you ever... Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm like the person who's the center of everything constantly, because so much effort.
Exactly. I think I would straddle the line between, like, introverted and then moments where I want to be extroverted and stuff.
Want to be as in, like, in a social setting?
Yeah, like in a social setting. Like, I'm fine. I think because I'm an only child, I've always been very comfortable being alone and being introverted and just being alone with my thoughts and my imagination and, you know, films and art and books or comics or whatever it is. And then, you know, when there are those moments, like, where I'm a very social person, you know, performing and doing, like, comedy and living in those circles where I'm out there, I'm like, I want to be the funniest one. I want to be the funniest one. I want to be the one that everyone wants to, like, that wants to make me laugh and make them want me to make them laugh. And, like, that's the attitude. And I think that's, like, to me, where the balance between those two characters are, which I think is like a very Greek balance between those two things of being, like, you know, small, reserved, respectful, and the other half of being like big, loud, gregarious, excited, giving love and taking love and that kind of that perspective.
Yeah, that kind of big character.
Yeah.
But do you feel like you are that when you try, or are you just being more yourself but funny?
You know what I mean? Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it's one of those things, it's both. And I think that it's like, I think that for me, a lot of it's like about energy and love, where it's like there's people that take, there's people that give. And there's moments where I know that because I am someone that I would consider myself someone that gives energy and like is a good listener and stuff and good at being a good communicator and all those kind of qualities that you would give to someone that's like, you know, empathetic or like, you know, or like a giver. But then there's like moments where I'm like, oh, when I'm not doing that. And I feel like that's when you can be a taker of energy. And I think that's like, to me, it's when it's like the Zorba thing is when you're like out there and you're out there being bigger than you are, or like bigger. It's hard. Oh God, I'm having trouble articulating it, but like that moment of like being pure energy and joy and like life, brother, being life.
Being life, brother. No, but like, as in, I know what you mean. Like, I've got to be honest, that level of, like where everything lines up and you are, because it's not just being life. It's that perfect. It's like when you've had just enough to drink, but not too much.
Yeah, that's me right now with my half sunk mythos.
Yeah, no, and you're slurring of words. To be honest, no one knows what you're talking about.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Like, as in for me, I mean, I think of something I actually was more when I was younger as well. Like, as in a bit more of that excitable, bigger and louder, but in a really fun way, yes. Drawing people in. And I don't know. I don't know if it's gone. I don't know if it's gone or whether it's just been tamped down by reality or what. Yeah, like have you done anything like that lately, let's say?
Well, not in the last 2 months. Not in the last 2 months.
Yeah, not in the last 2 months. Yeah, but how about before that? Would you say there was any moment?
I think it's now, I agree with you that like that it disappears more when you like start feeling more settled in your life and comfortable in your life, where I mean, like, I don't have those big nights where I like binge drink as frequently as I used to, which I would consider like that's the Zorba lifestyle where you're like out there partying and really enjoying yourself and giving yourself over to a life experience. I think maybe twice a year I'll do that now. and I can remember them. Like I go, yes, I know there was a night where I lived my full exuberant life. And then like the next day is like a write off. And I can't, I think it's like, I don't know. Do these people exist in real life, or is Zorba a complete fiction? I know he's based on a real man and this real man's philosophies. And I think the real guy's name, dude, this is crazy. So in the book and the movie and everything, it's Alexis Zorbas. In real life, it's George Zorbas. So it's both of
us. That's hilarious. What are we doing? Why are we recording some nerdy podcast? Forget this, man.
We got to get out there, dude. We got to get on a boat. You and I got to get on a boat.
George Zorbas. We've got to go. We've got to do it. I cannot believe
we've got to do it. We got to.
You're kidding me.
Me and you have to get on a boat sometime. That's like, that's all we got to do.
That's crazy. I can't. But although, of course, his name's George.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, what is he?
Everyone in Greece.
Yeah, is he going to be George or is he going to be named after Alexander the Great? Those are the two options that that you have.
Two like polar opposites as well. Like George is just the most common name there.
Yeah.
But oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, that's because I agree. And it, you know what? Even this conversation now is making me think about like, and I know everyone feels it a bit in quarantine. Mm. Which, to be honest, between you and me, I haven't felt that much. I've been not minding quarantine that much.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, you and I are similar. Like, I'm here at home with my movies. Like, I've got thousands of movies that I just want to watch. And, like, I've been re-watching a lot of movies, like, that I'd fallen in love with, like, as a teenager that I haven't revisited for a long time. Or movies that I think are, like, very key to my journey into being like a filmmaker or storyteller or someone that's like, you know, a celebrator of cinema, like those movies that have been key on my journey for that. Zorba was one of them. And I think that I've been finding a lot of comfort in just being able to just really enjoy my art, like that I take pleasure and take energy from. And I think that because I have like that introverted habit anyway, even though I appear to be an extrovert, it's like I find that immense amount of comfort in just doing that anyway.
All right. So do you feel like you give off the impression of being an extrovert in general?
I think because I'm like loud and I laugh a lot that when people like, you know, when people come into contact with me, that's like they'll think that. But then, like, I will not go out. Like, I won't go to a party, and nothing gives me greater pleasure than, like, just going, like, yeah, I'm just going to stay home tonight. I'm going to not go out to that. And I think that, you know, I think that's, like, you know, I can go out and be that extroverted person because I can go home and be within myself and be introverted. Oh, that sounded disgusting. But but be
inside myself.
But to be home and be quiet and then, like, you know, when I have a conversation like I'm having with you now, this is like one of my probably five conversations I'll have this week, I can be big and energetic and excited. And then as soon as this ends, I will play PlayStation for like 4 hours or something, or I'll go, right. I'll put a movie on, or I'll go cook, and then that's, you know, that's all I'll do, and I won't speak for like 4 hours.
Okay,
and I
right.
don't live so by myself either, which is the bad part.
Just sounded, look, you sound like a dream roommate to a lot of people, to be honest. But that's like, so did you feel like you're saying how, you know, you used to binge drink a lot more than you do now. Mm-hmm. Did you, like, was it a conscious choice or was it just you got older and got more responsibilities so you kind of stopped doing that as much? Or were you never doing it that much but you were doing it a bit more?
I never did it to where it was a problem anyway. Like, I've never...
I wasn't hinting.
Yeah, that. Dude, yeah. If you're, like, trying to get me on this shit, dude. No, like, I, you know, like, especially, like, you know, I would smoke marijuana a lot when I was, like, in my early 20s and stuff. And I really, like, enjoyed that. Like, especially when I started doing stand-up, I was like, oh, I'm a stoner comedian. Dude, I'm gonna freaking start a comedian. That's gonna be my thing. And then
good luck writing, man.
Yeah.
The art.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it like naturally drifted away. I stopped enjoying that. And then out like drinking to an extent where you would lose control of things. It became like, you know, it was like, you know, I think I've been about control a lot, especially when it comes to like substance stuff, where it's like you can go like, oh, I know this is going to make me feel, so this is part of control as well. But then, like, I just...
But you never let it swing out of...
No,
you never let yourself get too messy?
No, like, there'd be moments, and it, like, you know, when you're, like, 19 or whatever, getting over a breakup, like, your first time you've ever been broken up with, and you're like, oh, you get the emotion, and it's when all these emotions are new to you, you haven't experienced these emotions before, and, like, having, like, the big party lifestyle would, like, make them much, much worse. And I think now, you know, now I've had all those feelings. Like, I can control them. I can control these things. And it's like,
it's funny,
you know,
it's,
I like...
It's funny you're saying that about that. Sorry to cut you off there.
No.
But, like, even with that, though, you're like, yes. And when I had the breakup, I had the controlled loss of control.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're still twisting your narrative to be like, I'm in control.
Exactly.
With that, which is like... hilarious because everyone needs to be a little bit, but like, have you felt that's a part of you? Like, you can be a bit more, because that sounds very un
Yes.
Living in the moment in a way.
Exactly.
Having that attitude.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what the balance is. I guess that's why I like this book and I like this character, because I'm just like, God, wouldn't it be amazing to just do that? Wouldn't it just be amazing to be completely, in a way, it's even hard to use negative words to describe Zorba, because the way the book like really portrays him as like, this is a beautiful philosophy for life. But, you know, you think like, wouldn't it be great to be selfish? Wouldn't it be great to live without consequence and live for fun, full stop, and live for life, full stop? And I think that there's that envy in that where you're like, it would be awesome, but that's not the reality that I have lived in. That's not the reality that I want to put others through, in a way. But I think that, I guess the way it's portrayed in the book is like Zorba is like benevolent in a way. And because, like,
well, he's got a big heart.
He's got a big heart.
He's just full of energy. But he's always like, the people around him, he's trying to make them comfortable and happy, even if it means he lies to them.
Yeah, exactly.
In the present moment.
But like, and I see that as well, where I'm like, that's a quality that I like to think that I have, where it's like that big heartedness. But then it becomes that people pleasy thing. Like, am I a people pleaser? Maybe not. I don't think so, really. Like, I like to make people happy, but I don't like to lie or anything to do that.
But you're not afraid, like, I guess, would you, like, for example, people are like, you plan to stay in, people are like, let's get a drink, and you're like, yes or no? Like,
depends. Sometimes I'll say no, and it's like, exactly.
You're a selfish dog, is what it
exactly.
Sounds like.
Maybe I am. Maybe
I haven't structured this in. It is not my time for this, unfortunately. So,
yeah, sorry. This is my time. This is my time.
Yeah. I've got my scheduled hangover. It's May 7th from 5 till 9. All right. Yeah. After that,
exactly. This Mother's Day weekend, that's when I'm going crazy.
Would you consider yourself a bit of a control freak in some ways?
Maybe not a control freak. Like, I can use a positive word, maybe. I do like to be in control, yes. But I also, part of like why I'm drawn to filmmaking podcasting as like my main, more so than stand-up as well these days, as my main art form, or like, art form sounds weird for that, but like my main creative process is because it is really collaborative. And I think that part of like being a good creator is being a good collaborator. So it's not about control. It's about working with people and being able to like work with people together to create one thing, or to create full stop. I think that's what I've always valued in podcasting and filmmaking, is that it is an extremely collaborative medium. And, you know, there'd be times where I like working with people that have like a completely different sense of everything to me, a completely different brain, because then it's like I'm getting answers to questions I didn't even know I had, and like I coming up with solutions that my brain would never be able to. It's like getting access to a whole nother brain. I think that's like where I think that I can be controlled, and I'd like to have control, but part of the artistic process is the opposite of control. It's about that spark and spontaneity that collaboration brings together. So I guess that's my Zorba answer, is that I love spontaneity, and I think that's like something that really excites me.
Very, very precisely, you've chosen every word and story. <like that. laughs> I guess the beauty of that sort of process is that collaborative nature of it, and sharing ideas and having your ideas also shared by others as well, right? That's cool as well. When you're like, hey, I am helpful.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this, I'm adding to this. Okay. That's interesting. I actually was going to ask you about that from the creative stuff you mentioned earlier. Mm. When you're saying you were choosing your influences, it sounded strange to me. You said like your creative lineage. I always thought like I probably have not learned enough about film and stuff to probably know this, but like I would have thought that stuff is almost not a choice in a way.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I guess it isn't, like it's one of those things where it's like I have been like a watcher for a very long time, or, you know, I knew from a very young age, I'm like, I want to be artistic, or I want to like follow a creative path. So it's like, you know, I've always, it's one of those things where it's like when you're creative and you study it and stuff, it's not just that you're a student then, you're kind of like on a path of studying academia for your entire life is the way that I see it, where you will always be reading, you'll always be watching, and you'll always be like ingesting art. And I think that, you know, early on, I was very much going like, okay, these, I like that early time of like discovery where you like see something and it's like this gateway film or a gateway piece of art where you're like, I want to use that and I want to go through those gates and I want to explore every facet that inspired this or every piece of art and makes you like switch on and be more creative. And I think that there's people like Nikos Kazantzakis, Martin Scorsese, John Cassavetes, Penelope Spheeris, like people like that, that I discovered very early on in like that artistic creative journey that I still will go like, oh yeah, there's parts of those things like Mike Nichols, Elaine May, where I'm like, those are all parts of like my DNA as an artist. Brian De Palma, where I'm just like, oh, that's like what, those are like intrinsically like those things that are just like trapped there forever. And I think that because I've like always thought of it, like the creative process and the creative journey as like always being a scholarly journey as well, and a student's journey, is that I always think about that as like the idea of like that creative lineage, because it's like going from one to the next, like, you know, Alfred Hitchcock to Brian De Palma to Quentin Tarantino to da da da, and like down that path of like understanding that lineage. It's like, I think it's just it's one of those things that's like over the last few years has become more important to me thinking about it in that way.
As a framing point in your mind, like as in being able to slot them in like that to then draw from. But it's also, have you felt like it's important for you to, I guess what I found is so interesting when you said that, like when you said choosing your lineage sort of, because I always would have thought that was almost something that would happen organically. You'd like this thing, but I guess that's kind of what you meant.
Yeah, it's organic, but it's also like, you know, I knew of these things. So I'm like, I think that I'll like that. I want to explore that. Or it's been important to a loved one. So I want to understand that and make that part of my story as well.
Yeah, because I mean, like, the only reason I'm saying, because it was funny, I had this conversation in an earlier episode of Adam Carnevale about like my own aspirations sometimes can be a bit higher than maybe I actually am. Like, I'm not in like a bad way, but it's like sometimes I think I want to be more artsy than maybe I fundamentally might actually would have been if it didn't have that high art association with it, sort of. And it's like it's been interesting trying to like thread the needle of like maybe those snooty aspirations sometimes and who you actually are.
Totally.
And like lining those things up.
And I think as well, especially in this time that we are right now, it's like I feel like I'm always quite introspective, but now I am introspective in this way that might be negative, where I'm like, I'm doing podcasts and stuff, but is it creative? Is it like that artistic thing that, like, you know, that I like doing? I'm like, oh, you know, in the past I'd been writing stuff and trying to make shows and make TV shows and putting together pitches and writing scripts and, like, you know, trying to like make a bigger storytelling project podcast, like Cameron and I did Finding Drago, and do another one like that. Like, those are the kind of things that, like, I wish I would be doing, but in this time, I'm like, I can't do those. I can't put my mind to those things. And it's like that, I think that's that thing where it's like that, as like creatives, we always fight with that imposter syndrome, right? Where it's like, am I what I say I am? Am I what I think I am? Am I capable of doing what I want to be doing? And it's like those are those doubts that like you can't really, it's hard to fight them. It's hard to fight through them. I think right now, in like the time that you and I are living through, and everyone listening to this is maybe living through, they're listening to it as it comes out.
Yeah.
It's that it's harder to kind of fight through those things, because like, how can you be motivated? Some people are motivated and some people aren't. And I think right now I'm one of those people that's like, I'm trying to figure out if I am or I am not. So I don't know if I'm.
So you feel like you're kind of almost at the moment hitting the marks like of what's needed, but no more than that. You're not spreading out any further than
I guess right now it's like, I guess that's right, where it's like I could be doing more to challenge myself, where I'm like, oh, I've got this idea for a fucking movie or whatever. I've got this fucking idea about this ghost. I don't know. I'm making it up now, trying. That's how, like,
you just said a word.
Yeah.
that a ghost. And
yeah. Just, exactly. Where it's
IKEA
like,
and
I think it's just like, you know, it's such, there's so much crazy shit going on and also so little living, to bring it back to the book.
Because it's funny you say that, because when you say that, because like you're talking about, like, I guess the difference between the stuff which doesn't actually require, like, it still requires thinking to do, but it doesn't require extra thinking to do. You know, like, you're doing the podcast you've done before and stuff, but you're not actually in a position where you feel like stretching, maybe going into uncomfortable work, like, as in working where you're not really sure how it's going to go.
Challenging,
this could suck. Yeah, challenging yourself, right? And it's funny to tie it in as well when you think about, like, like, that would be another thing about Zorba, I would say, is in, like, as the character and one of those those contradictions, it's like, yeah, he's like utterly selfish and whatever, but you could almost say at the same time, yeah, if he decided I'm going to be creative now, he'll sit there and slug it out for 6 months and eat shit because he's like, I want to do that thing.
Exactly.
He would also have that drive within him to like push through those doubts almost. They wouldn't even be doubts. They just wouldn't even – that's kind of what makes him so appealing, this concept of like someone who – he could work at something and suck at it for a year and it wouldn't even be a problem
to him.
Like, as in,
oh, man, like, you nailed it. I think it's the idea is like he doesn't have doubts. Like he just is.
Yeah, even if he wants to work at something, it's like, yeah, I'm going to work at it. I'm going to be great at it. And he just works at it to like – not that that's touched on as much, but that's kind of the vibe he gives off, I guess, that no doubts – thing. And I guess right now maybe you feel just a bit of doubt, but it's more like a creative block almost. Do you reckon? Like, I don't know. That's
it's weird because, like, you know, there's times you have a creative block and like I gotta work through it, and now I'm like, I don't have that. Like, you gotta work through. I'm like, I'm just using this time to just like recuperate, re-energize, you know, think. And but it's like, I don't, it's like when this is over, hopefully, I just can go straight back to being normal and being like working. Like, it's not like I'm not busy either. Like, I'm still like working, doing podcasts, doing your show, like doing guesting on other shows and stuff like that, and making the most of that time and being busy. But it's like one of those things where it's like you said, that challenging work where you find those works that you will be the challenge to you. And it's like, will they come back? I do hope so. I really would love to like be out, really being creative and making stuff again, rather than because I love doing what I'm doing now, of like, you know, reading and watching and researching. I love research so much. I love learning, and like that's how I love learning, is like by reading and researching and watching and understanding and putting critical thought to things and criticizing and all of those things I love. But at the moment, those are the things that I can do, and now I can't do the other things is like why I'm really missing them.
Yeah. Like, I know, and you kind of feel like maybe there's a gap. Could you be doing some of it, I guess? I mean, again, this is me talking from my own thing, but, and it's funny because it ties into the Zorba and the living life to the fullest. But I had this feeling recently because I was talking to a friend and he has been in lockdown like everyone, but he's not like he's not crazy. Like, you know, I know some people who go crazy on Tinder and all that stuff during all that time, but he's a normal guy, I guess, with my finger quotation marks there, but like he's like, oh yeah, I got this, I got a couple of people I've been chatting to that I'm going to meet up with a date as soon as this ISO finishes, and I'm like, shit, I have no one.
Like,
I have not engaged with that part anywhere near, like, you'd think, I don't know, I guess a red-blooded human being would kind of engage with. And that's kind of been a gap where I feel like, oh, I'm feeling separate to what I feel like a lot of the world is experiencing right now, which is that chafing to get out there and go on a date and interact with people in that sense. Like, how have you been with that stuff, I guess? It's a weird way for me to get to
guess,
that question.
Well, I mean, I live with my partner on that specific, okay, right. On that specific front. But I think as well, it's like, it is that thing of like, I feel comfortable in it. You know, I guess it's that introverted thing where it's like, I feel comfortable in it and not wanting to jump out into the world and live again right now.
That's so funny that you were talking about how you wouldn't talk to anyone for 4 hours.
Exactly. Yeah, it's worse now that people know the truth.
It's so much worse. It's so much worse. Oh, that's hilarious. This is going to be one of 5 conversations we're going to have this whole week.
Well, one of them's a long continuing conversation that never ends, so...
Okay. Again, that never fucking ends.
I didn't say it that way, dude. That was how you interpreted it.
No, I'm loving it. You're sounding very Greek right now. It's amazing.
I'm going for another sip.
I know. But yeah, no, so that's cool, I guess. I think, I don't know, if I'm looking at the time now, we should probably start tying this up. Was there anything else you wanted to mention about?
I don't know.
Everything while we're here,
it was
a bit more of a chat.
No, yeah, it was. Yeah, exactly. We've only got time. I think it was. It's been really beautiful revisiting this text, and the darkness is something that I hadn't anticipated. Especially like I rewatched the movie like a few weeks ago. And
you didn't remember the...
No, I didn't remember the darkness. And I think that's one of those things that I like in a... is when you're challenged by a text or challenged by your preconceived notions. So I always think like, oh, it's Zorba. It's the Zorba show where he's like this big, gregarious character full of life and full of love. And then you read the book again, you watch the film again, and like, man, this is like Wake in Fright shit where it's like... It's like, you know, it makes you, it's got that on one side, it's like, oh, I'd love to go out there and see the world, love to go back to Greece. But then the way that like Crete is portrayed and some of this and like as like this, like it's kind of scary, right?
Like the whole beheading thing.
The beheading thing and like all of the that's all like this very close-minded, very backwards, even back then, attitude. The like village, it's set in the past as well, this book. Like this village lifestyle, like the village rumors and whispers and stuff, and that the narrator ends up having a one night stand with like this widow who's already has like, there's people in the village that are in love with this widow and they want her to remarry them and stuff. And he has this one night stand with her, and then she's seen as like, now she's already been seen as less than everyone else, and now she's seen as nothing, and they kill her, or because it leads to another person's suicide. And it's like very, it's very, very dark. And it was something that
it doesn't shy away. Yeah. It doesn't shy away from the actual contradictions, and even like it does. I know before you were trying to say how it's selfish, but I don't want to use that word, but I actually think it's very appropriate for Zorba. It doesn't actually shy away from showing how selfish he is.
Kind of.
Like it shows that he doesn't think of other people in that way, in a way which is kind of negative. Like I feel like actually that element, it kind of portrays, even though it ultimately is forgiving, it does show like he's got his older widower that he's flirting with all the time. And he treats her like shit.
Yeah, exactly. He leaves her, he comes back. He marries the rest of Zorba's life is he marries like a woman probably like 40, 50 years younger than him. And then he dies and she gives his instrument back to the narrator. And the narrator didn't see Zorba for like 20 years. It's like quite, it's all quite sad and melancholic. Even though like the stuff that we've connected to and been talking about has been like, the exciting stuff, whereas like a lot of this book and like this story is really, it's like imbued in the sadness. So I guess that is the contrast between the two things that I don't know. It's one of those things I didn't remember. And now I'm going back to them. Like I do like this contrast. I do like seeing like this sadder world and that there's one guy that doesn't, that like kind of rejects it in a way or lives beside it or around it or in contrast to it. I really like it. And I think that it's like scary. Like I kind of forget that there's moments of this story and this text that is scary.
Yeah, that's like, it's dark. Mm. It goes to dark places, which is interesting. And it's of the time as well. Like, the village thing, how it portrays that. Actually, one thing I do want to ask you, what did you think of the misogyny, I guess, of Zorba in his own weird way?
Oh, yeah. No, he is a misogynist, absolutely. I can't believe we haven't said that at all yet so far. We've left it to like the last 3 minutes of this podcast to go like, oh, yeah, the main character is a misogynist.
Hey, Alexi, you're a bit late. I asked you if you said it, wanted to say anything else. You didn't want to say
I know,
it.
I'm sorry.
I'm kind of getting your attitude towards women.
No.
You've been busted.
I've been busted, dude. I'm going to bust you, too, as well, dude. You could have said it this first second. But yeah.
No, I was just trying to trap you, bro. I'll own my, you grew up, it sounds like actually quite an effeminate household in terms of your ya and your mom and all that stuff. I probably grew up in quite the opposite. Three brothers, just my mom. I went to an all boys school. So for me, it's funny how when I was younger and I first read it, I did, even though this was university, I still got that it was misogynist, but I also thought it wasn't bad. Quotation mark misogyny, because the way he's talked, I'll be honest, like some of that thinking is ingrained in me, I would say, to this day. Like there's some lines in there where he's like, oh boss, you can't give laws to women, women, they're a different species, you can't ever treat them the same. You just got to let them do whatever they want.
I think
whenever they want,
because he's such a romantic character, it's easy to like you read it and you go like, this is misogynistic. But because he's like, he says it with like a glint in his eye, or like it is like in his romantic and poetic way of talking about life as being like this beautiful thing, that you're kind of like, because it's not really critical of him and his philosophy, that you kind of like just are able to go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, because I guess like it probably just speaks to a whole form of, we're going slightly off topic now, but this could be interesting. I guess a form of, it's still problematic because it can, what it can lead to in terms of thinking types, but it's not necessarily problematic in its own way where, I mean, it is still treating women as other. In that sense, but it's not necessarily saying other and bad. It's just saying other and different is what kind of where he comes from, which has its own inherent issues attached to it, I guess. But it's more acceptable almost. If that's as far as you're going, that's still, you know, like you can grow up and actually treat women the same. But
and I think as well, it's like, you know, reading it now, I don't know what it would, it's hard to kind of think about it contemporaneously, like how it would be, but you kind of like reading it now, the way that you can kind of see it is like, oh, that's that old world thing. That's the old country. No, it still fucking sucks, man. Like, it still sucks. Like, it's still, like, not... It's still, like, it is still, like you said, seeing that other and seeing that less than.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I if we want to go down this rabbit hole a bit, I sometimes struggle, again, because of my upbringing and because of my own base... I once did some comedy on it, which I think I might actually revisit sometime.
Yeah.
But that base feeling, because of how I grew up, of me thinking of females as other, not in terms of rights and all that stuff, but just in terms of them, I would like group them all separate to how I would group all guys.
Yeah.
And even that can be an issue kind of if you do that, putting them on a pedestal or something like that as well. It's kind of the same issue.
I would say as well that there is like an issue, like a cultural issue of like misogyny in like definitely like Greek and Mediterranean cultures, where it is like they do have like those set gender roles of like going back to this day, where like those set gender roles, and it's like that idea. I always remember like an uncle of mine, like as a joke, after we have like the big feast and stuff, he'd always be like, mazapseta, which means like clean them up. Like he'd do it as a character, and then he'd go pick up all his stuff and put it in the, like put it in the sink and like wash it himself. But it was
he did. What a little pansy. Yeah. What the fuck? That did not happen in my house. Let me tell you, it still doesn't.
It's like, it is that thing. Like, you know, you can test for it where it's like that. There is like that gender imbalance and those gender roles where it's like, you know, you don't want to use the word ingrained, but then you question like whether it is ingrained, where, you know, it's hard to talk about these things because, you know, you want to talk about your heritage and stuff with like pride and immense pride. But then to do that, you have to be honest about these things where it's like, yeah, it is there.
Yeah. I don't think necessarily means it's bad for you to point out the negatives in the culture, even as you are still for it.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, you know, part of that journey of like progression and growing is like to see it, to notice it, and then like you said, like we've been doing, like bring attention to it and talk about it. And like, you know, I will now have this thing where like I'll talk to like my relatives and like, dude, you're like, you're fucking old school, like grow up, like live now, where it's like, you know, that's been a journey for me to be able to confront those issues actually has been really tough and stuff. But like, you know, I've got like an uncle that I'm very close to, but he's very masculine and and I'm obviously not very masculine. Like, well, you know, I am, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm a tough guy, but you know, like that. And he's always like challenged that on me and stuff. And I'm like, oh, it's so annoying. But then like,
what, he's directly challenged you?
Yeah. But like, not in like, you know, trying to be jokingly, but it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it still sucks or whatever. So like the way that I've
felt that a bit.
Been able to, and like the way that I've like grown in the last like probably 6 or 7 years of like confronting that. He's like, now I just do the opposite to him, where I'm just really sweet to him and like will tell him that I love him and always like go cuddle him and kiss him and stuff. And like now he's swapped. He doesn't do that anymore. He likes that. I think because he's like always been like, oh, men are tough or whatever. I think now that like there's been another, not a little boy, like a man has like shown him like love, he's like, oh yeah, I like that more. And he's never ever questioned like that masculinity ever since.
Okay, that's interesting. And that is a funny point you make though, like, because, yeah, I didn't think about it. You growing up, obviously, in quite a feminine household and as an only child, did you feel that pressure sometimes to kind of be more
manly? Oh, big time. Manly, yeah, like in high school, I was like, you know, trying to be so mask and stuff. Like, you know, not to an extent that it's like, you know, trying to be like tougher and stuff. And then like just slowly realize like, oh no, that's not who I am. And kind of like, you know, having positive role models around you that are not that like high level misogynistic masculinity, that like you're seeing those, like, you know, growing up in like the 21st century, it's more common to have those become like people rising up as not, it's hard to describe now, but, you know, like I had other uncles that were like less masculine, and those would be like the people that I'm like, oh yeah, this uncle's so funny. This uncle like goes around like singing ABBA songs and stuff like that. I'm like, that's more people like think that he's the best than my like cranky, like masculine, angry uncle. More people think my uncle, to me, that's the Zorba. That's my uncle that's going around like singing ABBA and like laughing and having like this high, big laugh. I'm like, that's what I want to be. That's the person that everyone loves.
So you felt like that actually had an impact on how you kind of saw your attempts at
masculinity, exactly. I guess.
You didn't feel like you could represent it a different way.
Yeah, exactly. When I started like realizing that shit, I'm like, oh, fuck that. Why would I want to be like fucking, you know, people like Tony Soprano or like Sonny Corleone, where it's like those are those like really hyper masculine role models where I was like, that's awesome. That's what I want to be. I want to be tough. And I'm like, I'm not, absolutely not that. I can't do that. And it's like that realization, definitely like a high school realization.
All right. Okay. That's well, that sounds like a healthy thing. And it's funny you say that because, yeah, Zorba is more the one who's singing ABBA and running around and dancing and stuff, because he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, even though he's got these attitudes that are backwards, at the same time, he doesn't sit in that label as much or whatever. He doesn't take it as a defensive thing. He's like, they're different, I'm different, let's party.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Which is a healthier expression.
Let's hope. In a weird way. Yeah. We're all wrong.
Let's hope, right? That's, I guess that sounds like a positive place to kind of end the conversation.
Man, George, this has been such a great hangout with you tonight.
That's all right.
It's been so fun.
Yeah, well, hopefully you've maybe going to look at Zorba a little bit differently or a little bit more in depth as well.
Yeah, let's hope. I got to try and finish it now. Got to try and read it again.
The great effeminate Zorba.
Yeah, that's it, dude. We're going to write it.
As a feminist role model.
We're going to write it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Feminist icon, Zorba the great. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much. Yeah, kind of that's it. You want to say anything else before you sign off?
Oh, well, check out my podcast on Sanspantis Network as well. Me and Cameron James do Total Reboot, where we talk about movies, reboots, remakes, and ripoffs. We'll do an original movie 1 week, like a classic, and then we'll do the movie that ripped it off or remade it or rebooted or the week after that. And yeah, it's really fun. It's like this kind of like in-depth conversations about, like, I guess, artistic expression, and then also us goofing around, being silly, mucking around, doing impressions and stuff like that. Very, very silly, but very fun. We take it seriously, but also take it very silly. But that's Total Reboot. Check it out. It's real fun to do.
Nice. All right. Thanks a lot.
My
cheers
pleasure.
To that, Alexi. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.